This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:13. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to, I think, a discussion that has come up in many forms over the course of the last few months. This question of vaccines or medicines and patents, not just COVID-19, but really all life-saving medicines. And this comes on the wake of our Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin speaking at in the Nikkei's Future of Asia conference today in Tokyo. And he basically said that Asia should be leading the way when it comes to opening up patent protections in order to be able to produce cheaper generic versions of medication for critical diseases.
So this is following on U.S. President Joe Biden administration's stated intention to support the temporary waiver of intellectual property protection for the COVID-19 vaccine, which would, of course, allow for cheaper access to vaccines, more widely available access. And so essentially, our Prime Minister is saying that, yes, that is something that we should see. And also, we should be leading the way, which makes sense when you consider the kinds of inequities that we're talking about, and really the countries that benefit in more ways than one, if we were to do this.
So our PM also spoke about this as a sort of a way to look outward and to think globally and of a global good, rather than only taking a me first or a country first or a nationalistic approach. And I think this fits into conversations that we've been having more generally about, I suppose, where the responsibility lies or where that balance lies between profit, making money off of medicines, and which is a necessary sort of thing to keep the pharmaceutical industry going, but at the same time, this idea of a greater good. So share your thoughts with us on this. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're now moving on. We're now joined by public health researcher Dr. Mark Cheong to shed some light on the situation and the, I suppose, the challenges when it comes to this. Mark, it's good to have you with us. So help us understand why there have been these increasing calls to lift patent protections on some medicines.
Well, that's a fantastic question. The calls to reform intellectual property and patent protections for medicines really has been going on for decades now. So it's not a new topic for those of us who've been advocating for it. And really, it's been most visible when we've been talking about medicines for HIV and then with antivirals for hepatitis C. I guess it's becoming much more interesting to the public now due to the problems surrounding the COVID vaccine supply. And so it's raised the interest on patent protections for medicines to a much higher level of awareness. I guess everyone is interested in getting protected through vaccination. And so because of this, more and more people are asking the question, you know, why are we letting intellectual property and patent protections limit the amount of vaccines that are produced and the amount of vaccines that are available? And at the end of the day, who really benefits from these patent protections on these vaccines?
So could you walk us through the current patent process for vaccines in general?
Well, I'm not an intellectual property lawyer, I'm afraid, so I can't walk you through the specific process. Nevertheless, what would happen is that the company who invented or developed the vaccine, what we call the innovator, would actually submit an application to each respective country's patent office, and then with their approval, then gain a patent for that vaccine. Now, I guess the one thing that I would want to highlight on the side is that I think sometimes there is this popular idea that a single vaccine is protected by a single patent, and if we do away with that one patent, then that vaccine is free. And the reality is that you will find that a patent product is typically protected by multiple patents, by a ticket of patents. Usually you will have different patents for each different component of the vaccine, the processes used, the devices involved, and how even the vaccine is formulated. And so to be able to, let's say, completely free a vaccine from its patent protections will mean not only waiving off one patent for that vaccine, but actually making sure that, you know, you actually gain freedom from all the associated patents for that vaccine product itself.
So who holds these patents currently and for how long in general?
Well, again, the patents are typically held by the innovator or the inventor of the product, or what's more common nowadays, it's held by a large company that has bought over the intellectual property rights of the product from the original inventor. So what commonly happens is that you may have small technological firms who, through their research and development process, have stumbled upon a new molecule or a new drug or new vaccine. And then, once they've done some studies to show that it's promising and it could work, you might have a large pharmaceutical company approach them and to buy it up. And then this company would then file for patent protections with the relevant authorities, and then they would hold that patent. So then typically, a patent lasts for 20 years. And I guess there are many opinions as to whether 20 years is a long time or a short time. However, the thing to note, you know, whether or not you think 20 years is a long time or a short time, it's important to note that abuse of the patent system has frequently occurred whenever it comes to pharmaceuticals, where what we do see happening is often extensions of the patent term have been sought, or new patents are filed on the existing product for trivial or non-innovative changes to the product. And this can then result in multiple decade extensions to patents that were supposed to be expired after 20 years. So we call this poor practice evergreening. And it is a tactic that is often used to prevent other pharmaceutical companies from making generic versions of the medicine or of the vaccine, which of course in turn keeps prices high.
So while we're on that, another common argument is that lifting these protections discourages pharma companies from investing money into R&D to create these medicines in the first place. What do you make of that reasoning?
Well, you know what? I actually don't believe that. You know, it's a threat that's as old as this whole argument. And I don't believe that. I believe that while obviously pharmaceutical companies would like to keep patent protections the way they are, you know, should this landscape change, should these regulations change, I believe the pharma industry will continue to adapt to changing IP rules and in order to continue their business operations. And if not the existing pharmaceutical companies, I believe in the free market. I believe that emerging competitors will come up to take advantage of any gap in the market that's actually exposed by pharmaceutical companies that have chosen to withdraw.
And besides these points that you've brought up, could you run us through some of the pros and cons of lifting these patents, particularly during a pandemic?
Well, the pros, and I think we are becoming more and more aware of the pros as the argument has become more public. And really, again, lifting the intellectual property and patent protections on these vaccines will mean that the manufacturing of vaccines will not be limited to just a few pharmaceutical companies and the manufacturers that they've licensed to produce them. And when coupled along with the wholesale transfer of technology and know-how, this will allow pharmaceutical companies from all over the world, you know, including countries like Malaysia and other middle-income countries, the opportunity to produce these vaccines not only for their own citizens, but to their regional neighbors and for lower-income countries as well. And really, this is especially important to massively expand the global supply of vaccines and in order to ensure that everyone in the world can get vaccinated as soon as possible. And really, when we talk about cons, you know, there are a lot of cons that have been raised up by various interested parties. And I guess none of these are credible enough to repeat here, I'm afraid. And none of these cons are equal to the benefits that we would gain, especially considering the global pandemic that we are facing today.
So the Prime Minister said it's time for global property rights to be created instead. What does that mean? What would it look like?
Well, I'm not exactly clear on the exact term, global property rights, so I don't know exactly what the Prime Minister means. However, I do believe that the Prime Minister's sentiment is that the vaccines should not be the property of a few pharmaceutical companies, but rather the shared property of the entire world. This would make vaccines and other COVID-19 technologies a global public health good. And this is where these goods would be provided to everyone and anyone in the world who needed it, irrespective of their purchasing power or their position in society. And in order to do that, this would require, of course, a global cooperation to ensure that these goods are produced in ample quantities and are available at little to no cost. And really, the very obvious barrier that's standing in the way of this are patent protections and intellectual property rights on these vaccines.
We currently do have philanthropic efforts like the COVAX facility to improve vaccine access. So how impactful have programs like this been?
Well, certainly these efforts certainly have had their benefits. They've certainly helped especially the lowest income countries gain a certain supply of vaccines to vaccinate some of their healthcare workers and, you know, they are most high risk. But what we are also seeing as the situation develops is that these philanthropic efforts are far from adequate. COVAX itself, based on the latest reports, is struggling in order to meet its objectives for vaccinating at least 20% of the world's most vulnerable. And, you know, one of the reasons behind it was because they were relying on the supply coming out from the Serum Institute of India, which was one of the manufacturers that were licensed by the global pharmaceutical companies. And now with the Serum Institute of India facing issues with supplying COVAX, COVAX in turn has faced issues in supplying the countries that it has committed to. And to us, again, this drives home the message that philanthropy and charity, while good intention and certainly noble, will never be sufficient enough to meet the global need. You know, we need a much larger global manufacturing capacity in order to inoculate the whole world.
And are there other structural reforms that could go a long way in terms of making vaccines more equitable, more accessible?
Well, I guess on the global front, with regards to pharmaceuticals, one thing that we've been constantly pushing for is, of course, you need better transparency in how vaccines and other pharmaceuticals are priced. And that in relation to that as well, we also want to get better transparency about where the investment for research and development comes from, considering that a lot of the argument behind, you know, the need for patent protections and the high prices for these products, it always comes back down to the need to recoup the R&D that was put in to develop these products. But what we do know is that a very high proportion of the R&D is actually financed through public monies. And so one of the reforms that should really come in is, first of all, transparency with regards to the investment. Secondly, is to ensure that public investment into the R&D of pharmaceutical products should come with conditions that ensure that these vaccines or pharmaceutical products are produced and they are made available as a public good. And I guess then on a more micro scale, as we are all increasingly aware of now, supply is just one piece of the issue. If we are talking about making vaccines more equitable and accessible, then really we have to look at how we are designing our healthcare system as well as our vaccine distribution systems. It has to be, we need to have universal healthcare. We need to ensure that our public health systems are strengthened so that healthcare and things like vaccines are not only available to those who have money or those who are privileged. Specifically with regards to the vaccine distribution, we also need to have better systems that are able to identify and reach out to high-risk and vulnerable segments of the population in order to be able to protect them with the vaccines. Last but not least, I guess for Malaysia, one thing on my wish list is that we invest heavier in R&D as well as like our own homegrown pharmaceutical industry in order to ensure that we are able to become an independent vaccine producing country so that we can not only provide our own citizens with vaccines as well as those people living in our neighboring countries as well.
And ultimately, who has the influence and power to be to make a decision to release these protections?
Well, that's really very interesting. People will point to bodies like World Trade Organization and to governments and all that. And the curious thing is that it actually starts with us. It usually starts with public pressure, right? So we need to get the man on the street aware of these issues and get them to understand why this is important and get them to apply pressure to their local governments, and then for these governments to then collectively come together and apply pressure upwards and upwards and upwards until the whole world gets together and decides that this is the right thing to do. So, I guess the message is don't underestimate the importance of the man on the street, and certainly it's important to have all of us come together to make this wish come true.
Mark, thanks again for speaking with us today. That was public health researcher Dr. Mark Cheong speaking to us about the opening up of patents for life-saving medicines. So share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.